What's up, everybody? This is Joffer Papa Pompenizai, aka with my homeboy John the Matt Maz, and we have the love of my life, the girl who broke my heart on the last podcast we had her. You know, I don't even want to introduce her. This is bullshit. You can introduce her.
Back to shoot you down yet again.
It's our friend Steph. We've actually been becoming quite good friends through our other friend, through OMG Butter. But actually, I wanted to have Steph back on today because I finally spent the $9.99 on iTunes and downloaded her book. and I've been loving it. Joffer just kind of recently browsed over it, and I've been reading it over the past few weeks. And I just wanted to have you on so you could... We could just talk about a few things and then talk about your upcoming projects. The one thing that I really wanted to touch base on with the Paleo Athlete was your huge you kind of revolved around a lot of performance athletes missing carbs in their diet and performance carbs. Not like ice cream and Chinese food, my favorite things, but good quality carbs. And after I read through your book, I was like, wow, that's definitely something that I've been missing in my diet, because most people are like, I need to cut weight, I need to cut carbs, and then they sacrifice performance.
Yeah, how you're going to eat or prep like right before a competition might be different than what you're going to have as the foundation for your nutrition plan, like, you know, throughout your training cycle and stuff like that. But yeah, I think you're right. There's a lot of kind of misconception about what's really good quality, not only just food in general, but carbohydrate and what the different roles of different carbohydrates are and stuff like that. So
now there's something interesting that I did a really quick glance at the book. Number one, I love the way you wrote it.
You read it like the way you talk, which is awesome.
Thanks.
Exactly. So it was actually kind of comforting. It wasn't like just some, you know, academic trying to put knowledge down your throat. Like, you were actually very
sarcastic,
and it's a good read.
I think I used the F word a couple times, so, you know.
That's cool. It's all good.
We're from New Jersey, so that's fine.
One thing I actually want you to touch up on, because I'm sure a lot of people, you know, everybody's a nutritionist nowadays, you know.
Yeah.
So there's one thing that you mentioned about fructose not being the ideal source of post-workout carbohydrates. Now, I know right off the bat, I agree with you on that. But there's going to be people reading that going, oh, what does she know? She's a woman. But
what?
But can you further go into that? Because that's something I read. I was like, oh, I want her to kind of edumacate people.
Yeah, so fructose is the type of sugar that we find in fruit. It's a disaccharide, so it's two sugars put together. Fructose is a monosaccharide. So it's a simple sugar. Sucrose is actually of glucose plus fructose. So table sugar is two sugars put together. But anyway, fructose and glucose are basically a single sugar each. The issue with fructose is that it preferentially is uptaken by the liver. Now, you've got glycogen storage sites, if you will, in your liver and basically in the muscle, so your skeletal muscle. The problem is when you deplete that source of glycogen through training, for example, you've just done like some real intense, like high intensity stuff, or you've just done a really long, super long run or something like that that's more endurance based, you're going to be depleting that glycogen in your muscle. The issue with fructose is that it's going to refill your liver first, preferentially, and not your muscle. Okay. So it's an inefficient tank. Now, is it better than eating nothing? Yes. But what we'd like to see is that people are eating better sources of glucose, so starchy carbohydrates that are then broken down into glucose, to refill the muscle straight away. It's a less stressful type of situation on the body than having to put the fructose in the liver and then reshuffle it back out to the muscle, right? And when you're training hard, especially back-to-back-to-back days, time is of the essence. So you want to refill your muscle glycogen stores as quickly and efficiently as possible so that you can not only be ready for the next training session, but put less stress on your body while doing it. We want to devote as many resources to recovery as we possibly can between training sessions.
Now, what about, I know you were talking about most sugars being fructose. What about, they say, again, talking about other authors, like, not to name drop, like Brendan Brazier is like, oh, have dates. Dates are, you know, immediately glucose and they go right in your system. What do you think about that? I still think starchy carbs are the best option, but.
Yeah, I would agree with you there. Again, like, would dates be a better option than a kick in the shins?
Yeah.
Like, you know, so if you're kind of, if you're out training somewhere that's new or you're at an event and they've got some food that you didn't even bring anything with you, like, are eating those things kind of in a pinch fine? Yeah, like, it's not, you're not going to, your performance just by that one time or every once in a while. But again, it's like, how can you set yourself up for success in the long term? And like, finding the best ways to refuel that are the most efficient is going to benefit you more. Now, the issue with stuff like dates is that some people can't stop eating them because they're just so,
like,
sweet.
Just like me looking at you. I can't stop looking at you. You're so sweet.
Rot your teeth out, right?
I know, right?
And so, you know, like, what I'd like to see is, instead of somebody always turning to something like dates or a banana, is that we start introducing more starchy vegetables or kind of just more starches in general and get away from some of that fructose when you can. But as always, like, variety is really important in your diet. And I know a lot of athletes, I'm guilty of this too. There was a period of time where I only eat like grass-fed ground beef, right? Because you just kind of fall into a rut and it's easy. And if you can, if you don't have to think about what you're going to eat, you're just like, this is what I always eat. It's easy. The problem with that is that we're just limiting micronutrient profile over time. Like, you want to get as wide a variety of things as possible. So not only, you know, if you're stuck in a sweet potato rut, try something new. Try some plantains fried in ghee with some cinnamon on it. That stuff's really good.
Yeah, no, something I'll never do.
You're up. No, I have a question. In your book, it was talking about white rice that is paleo, but not really paleo, and there's no paleo police. They're going to put you in paleo jail.
I'm calling Rob Wolf.
I know Rob really well.
Then I'm not calling him.
And I didn't know white rice was gluten-free as well. So, I mean,
well, gluten's a protein that you bought from wheat.
Yeah, well, shit.
Yeah, I just put you on the spot, you idiot.
Good grains too, like barley and oats and rye. So, yeah, so white rice is definitely like a very controversial, like, people are a lot more accepting of the idea of eating white potatoes than they are of white rice. White rice kind of has some negatives and it has some positives. So positives, it doesn't contain gluten. It's basically like a pure packet of starch. So we're talking about, right, source of glucose that's going to help you refill your muscle glycogen straight away. Like, that's it. It's just like, boom, bomb of starch, and you can start to kind of refill your muscle glycogen. The bad thing is it's not very dense in nutrition, so that's kind of a negative. You know, if we're like, okay, how can we optimize nutrient density? White rice isn't going to necessarily get us there. Is it devoid of nutrition? No, it's just not as nutrient dense. For some people, especially if they're not really insulin sensitive yet, they're still kind of dealing with some insulin insensitivity and stuff like that, white rice can really just kind of get their blood sugar completely out of whack. You know, so if you're trying to really lose a lot of body fat, if you're dealing with metabolic issues, like, I don't think white rice is a great thing, but neither do I think that you should be smashing yourself with training if that describes you, right? Like, you've got more important priorities to take care of before you start doing that. But for people that have good body composition, they're training really hard, otherwise they're eating a wide variety of nutrients. I don't see why white rice couldn't be an option for people, especially since it's very convenient to eat post-workout. So call me the black sheep. I've had people write to me and tell me, how dare I say I'm paleo if I say some people might eat white rice. But I'm like, look, the type of people that I see in training, and I'm sure you guys do too, are folks that are super busy, right? They're not professional athletes in the sense that it's not their job. They're doing it on top of their full-time job, right? They've got families, they've got other commitments, and like, they're still training super hard. So for them, like, it's like, what are you going to prioritize? Are you going to say, all right, like, we're going to refuel with some white rice here, or I have to go home and, like, I can't cook things and, you know, I'm dealing with my family and all this stuff. So my thing is, like, there's an ideal to real life. And for people in real life, that might fit that post-workout kind of niche. You know what I'm saying?
Definitely. Now, let's say, because, you know, I follow you on Insta stock, and I see a lot of times that, you know, I see you lifting some heavy weight. I mean, you're awesome. I watch your videos. I'm like, man, I could have been in love with this woman. But question, how, being that you're so competitive, you know, you're also competing in Olympic lifting, how is your diet? How do you tone it in? Like, what's a typical day of eating for you?
Good question.
And
so, yeah.
How much is it changing through, you know, your, like, competition season and then, like, your kind of your off season? Because you're obviously not going to be eating the same way you are during training, right?
Yeah, it really depends when there's a meet. So I lifted in the Cal State Games, which is our state lifting competition, and I hadn't done a weightlifting meet in 3 years. So, I mean, I've been training through that time, and I had about 2.5 years where I was CrossFitting in between then, but it was my first meet in 3 years, so I knew I was going to have to cut about 2 kilos to make my weight class. So this is something that, I mean, you guys, your audience is very familiar with.
Yeah.
It's weight classes and weight cuts and stuff like that. So leading up to the meet a few weeks out, I knew, you know, 2 kilos is about
five pounds.
It's not a huge amount. But basically cut back on my starchy carbohydrate intake. So I normally kind of cycle my carbs. Like, some days I'll be really low carb, not on purpose, but just because I don't feel like I
want
sweet potato or fruit or stuff like that. And then some days, you know, I incorporate those types of things. But leading up to the meet, I cut out all starchy veggies, all kinds of starch in general. So, like, no rice, no other sources of starch. And focused mostly on green veggies and stuff like that. So that was one thing. The second thing was I just cut back a little bit on intake. Normally I don't, you know, I don't count calories. I don't count what I put on my plate in terms of macros. But I did kind of reduce my volume of intake just a little bit. And I was experimenting and playing around with some kind of like water protocols and trying to like hyperhydrate.
Oh, I could have helped you with that.
Which didn't actually work. And
did you sodium overload?
No.
Oh, there you go.
Not at the beginning, but then I did. So it's interesting though. I think, so next year I'm going to do this presentation in New Zealand, for the Ancestral Health Society there. And I think my focus is going to be, women and weight cutting, because we've got some differences compared to guys, like in terms of physiologically how weight cuts work.
Simple enough, your menstrual cycle throws everything for a loop.
You're completely fucked. Like,
yeah.
So anyway, that kind of digresses. But like normally I eat a pretty balanced plate of protein, veggies, some fruit, maybe like once or twice a day, especially in the summer. I love berries, and berries are one of the best fruits you can possibly eat. They're super packed with nutrition. So in the sun, eat some more berries than the rest of the year, or sweet potatoes or plantains, stuff like that. And then healthy fats. And that's what a typical meal will look like. Because we train at noontime, I'll have a large, like as much as I can eat comfortably, breakfast at about 8 o'clock in the morning. And then we'll go train at noon. I'll come back, I'll have a little bit of like post-workout, and then I'll try to eat a small thing like after I train, and then I'll eat a relatively normal sized dinner. So I don't do anything that's really like, there's no witchcraft involved. It's just like, take a plate, fill it halfway with veggies, and then put a big hunk of meat on there and some fat, and like, you're good to go. I mean, it's not anything complicated. But for weightlifting, I find I don't need as many carbs as I did when I was CrossFitting, simply because, you know, we're doing 3 lifts and sitting down. It's, you know, we're relying mostly on ATP for our lifting instead of glycogen. So There's still demand on the CNS for glucose there, but it's not as intense as something like CrossFit.
So now, when is your next competition, and how are you prepping for it?
I'm so sad to tell you this, but a couple of days ago, USAW came out with a revision to their rules for the American Open. So at the meet a couple weeks ago, I qualified for the American Open in December in D.C., but because their membership of USAW has grown by about double in the last 2 years, the last meet, which was nationals that they had up in Salt Lake City, was about 400 lifters,
mm-hmm.
and it was just too much for a double platform, kind of 3-day meet. So they ended up just 2 days ago changing the qualifying rules. Like they didn't raise the qualifying minimum, but they were like, okay, listen, we're only going to take X amount of lifters. And then if your percentage, you know, basically the lower your percentage over the qualifying total, they're like there's probably not a chance you'll get in. So at this point, I may do a local meet in the fall. We've started a new cycle, new training cycle after the meet. So last week was kind of a deload week for us, you know, lighter weights and just kind of doing some not fun stuff, like lots of RDLs and pulls and shit like that. And then
so now, because they decided to change the rules, it took you out of being qualified.
You weren't grandfathered in because I guess you didn't have enough competitions previously.
I'm going to write a letter to the NAACP about this.
ACLU.
So basically they capped the event at a certain number of people and they're only taking a certain number per weight class. And because I only made the qualifying total by one, it was over by 1 kilo. You know, if I had made it, my qualifying total was 15 kilos over, I'd probably have a better shot of making it.
Yeah, but that's still that's lame. Lame on their part.
I get it. I wish they had waited till next year, but, so I'll probably do a local meet in the fall. And then next year, the big goal at this point, they changed the rules for nationals. They increased the qualifying total in my weight class by about 13 kilos. But I'd love to qualify for nationals next year, if not masters nationals, because I am technically a masters athlete as a weightlifter. So
is masters basically by weight, age? Is it
35 and up.
35
and
wait. You're 35 and up?
Yeah, I'm 30. I turned 35 this year.
Wow, you look amazing.
You know, good clean eating, good clean living, balanced lifestyle.
I gotta try this paleo voodoo that you're on. It also helps you live in Southern California and the weather's nice every
day. And you smile a lot, and that's supposed to, you know, make you feel better.
Yeah, you know, SoCal's not a bad gig.
So now you said you may do a little competition in the fall. Right now you're kind of in a deload situation. When you're deloading, do you kind of, for fun, you know, do a little more CrossFit-oriented workouts just because you're kind of chilling out a little bit and you want to do something different, or not really?
You know what? I don't. And two that I found was even a slight increase in volume and stuff like pull-ups started to aggravate some older injuries that I had from CrossFit. So I just was like, you know what? It's not like, for example, I've got what is essentially like tennis elbow in my right elbow from
playing tennis for many years.
And we can't figure out exactly like it's not just one thing that gets it all fired up. But when
put it up to the screen, I'll kiss it and make it better.
She needs that Mike Mahler is an enzyme.
Yeah.
When the CrossFit Open was going on back in February, March, I just jumped into some of those workouts just for fun. And I was like, you know, I absolutely didn't care how I did. I just wanted to do some stuff and be part of the gym. And I ended up just from like 2 or 3 workouts. So I was like, it's not worth it for me. Right now we're kind of in a high volume phase of our weightlifting cycle. So everything we're doing is just like tons of volume. We walk sometimes for exercise, and maybe I'll jump on the rower a little bit, but that's about it.
So are you doing more activities now since your schedule's kind of freed up? Because you had posted something a few months back that now you're going to dedicate all your time to Stupid Easy Paleo and Performance Athlete, or Paleo Performance Athlete, because you left your teaching gig, and now you're just doing it. You're doing this full time.
Yeah, I work on Stupid Easy Paleo full time. So, you know, and all the stuff that's involved, all the other projects involved in that, whether that's the cookbook or there's a new site that we're in the very early stages. Yeah, that's what I do full time now. It's my full time job. And writing the book was kind of like I crawled under a rock for a while. But I will say I was really proud of myself for continuing to train during that time and making training a priority, because a lot of folks that write books basically kill themselves when they do it, in terms of they go into adrenal fatigue and just, you know, it's like high stress and all this stuff. And I was like, I am not going to be that person. So I trained all the way through writing the book, and then basically right when I was done with the book is when we had that weightlifting meet. So I was really happy that I could live the actual lifestyle that I promote to people, is like have a balanced life, train, but also find balance amongst your work and what things that you do. So I was happy that I was able to do that.
Now, for most people who don't know, your first book was more about like dispelling some of the nutrition myths and kind of giving people a baseline to start with their nutritional programming. What is your second book going to focus more on?
So the second book is called The Performance Paleo Cookbook, and it's recipes. So 100 recipes spelled out throughout the book. And you're right, like the paleo athlete is a lot more about kind of the theory and implementation of how to do a paleo diet if you're an athlete, but this focuses more or less on the food. So, all right, now that you understand you're going to eat your carbs, you need to eat more protein, what are some ways to actually do that? And so the way I've set the book up is there's a chapter on kind of pre-workout and post-workout, like snacky food, you know, not a meal that you would have and go stuff that you can take with you. And then the rest of the chapters are laid out kind of by main ingredients. So proteins, carb stuff, veggies, and a couple of other things. And then how can you kind of put them all together and make meals out of that? And so it's more or less to give people a different frame of reference for the types of foods that they're going to eat. Because I think some folks don't even know what, you know, is this thing a protein or is it a carbohydrate or is it a fat? And yeah, that's very reductionist. I mean, many foods contain all of those macronutrients, but, you know, the dominant macronutrient there. And so I think it's going to be a way for people to really start constructing meals that are going to feed them in those, you know, other times of the day where they're like, I have to sit down and eat breakfast, lunch, and dinner, but I want to do it in a more balanced way. So I'm fueling myself adequately.
And not the same thing you're talking about, getting in that food rut, eating the same thing at the same time over and over every day. You get more of the variety. And like, you know, I see you post some pictures and like you have slow cooker recipes, dessert-esque recipes, all your different coffee recipes. And like the variety is awesome because you're not just eating like eggs and bacon every morning or, you know, whatever you're eating your post-workout, same protein shake or the same banana, like, you know.
Yeah, I do. It's funny. I do have a couple of kind of like I would call dessert recipes in the book, but they're kind of sneaky because they're like good for you. So you know, like collagen or gelatin or, you know, things like that. And, you know, it's nothing over the top, like no cakes, no cookies and stuff like that. But just like little things that you can if you're looking for something sweet, but that it won't really kind of set you off and make you fall into a box of donuts later on.
I love those.
Now, quick question. So now I think a lot of people can see you love coffee. Okay. How do you feel about the whole bulletproof coffee that's going on? I know right now it's kind of like
well, microtoxins, they say, is bullshit.
Well, you know, but there's a certain thing like the way that there, it's not just them, there's other people who make coffee nowadays that are saying, yeah, you know, ours is the best coffee, you know, it's the purest, it's the this, it's the
single
that.
Source, all
yeah.
That shit.
How do you feel about all that that's going on? What kind of coffee do you prefer, and do you put butter in your coffee, and can I make you coffee sometime?
Should I work backwards?
No, I work backwards.
Yes. And okay, so the rest of it. I try to, and this, my husband can attest to this, we don't drink caffeine at 12 noon. So I think it's really important for people especially to get a handle on the fact that for some folks, they are genetically predisposed to be slow metabolizers of caffeine. So if you're eating or drinking a lot of caffeine after 12, that can screw up your sleep. And some people are fast metabolizers, like crack on, good for you, lucky SOB. But a lot of people are slow metabolizers. So I try to keep my coffee consumption to before 12. And I also don't use it as a meal substitute, which is where I think we get into trouble. And when I say trouble, I mean just like overall, over time, it becomes a pattern and we're not actually getting healthier from it. So caffeine is an appetite suppressant. And so a lot of people who are pounding lots of, especially bulletproof coffee and bulletproof style coffee. So things that are just butter coffee or butter with coconut oil, like you don't have to buy the beans and the special upgraded oil to fall into this category, but it's like you're eating a ton of fat at one time, which fat's not necessarily a bad thing. But couple that with the caffeine and then people are like, well, I don't feel like eating until 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So then they end up not eating a lot throughout the day. They're hypocaloric. And then they go day after day after day and they're hypocaloric. And then they just, they're not getting any healthier, right? So they're low on nutrition. So, I mean, I think it's got some good merits to it. If it's just a way to get extra fat into your diet, like that's cool. But I drink mine with breakfast and I actually prefer just grass-fed heavy cream in my coffee.
Yeah. I mean, we've kind of come up with something a little different where we've been using coffee as like your caffeine stimulant and then adding in protein and mm-hmm. then any other high fats you want. And we blend it and it's like,
it's like a milkshake.
It's a, almost, yeah. it's really
it brings all the boys to the yard.
Exactly. It is yummy.
Yeah.
You can like, throw your fats in there or your, you know, coconut milk or whatever.
Yeah. I like a company called Stronger, Faster, Healthier. I've used their stuff for 3 or 4 years now and they've got a new
they're a coffee
kind of,
company, by the way.
What's that?
You said Stronger, Faster. They're a coffee company.
Stronger, Faster, Healthier. No, they do primarily protein, but they also do fish oil.
Okay.
And they've got a product called Fuel, which is their whey protein plus MCT.
Oh, wow.
So it's actually like that. Sometimes I'll throw that in my coffee as well. It's just a little bit of extra protein. But I would just kind of caution people, like if you're hitting the bulletproof hard or you're taking some protein along with that coffee, because again, like, you know, there are a lot of people that are rabid supporters of it, and I get it. They love it, but I'm like, you're now deficient in protein for the day because you didn't eat any protein or put any extra protein in that coffee. So just get your protein, people, for Christ's sake.
Yeah. I'm going to start throwing bacon in my coffee.
Yo, I was going to do raw eggs.
There you go. So, all right, so now... next question we're going to ask about your book. So now you have this book out. You have another book out. What are some other big projects that are on the pipeline for you?
Interesting that you would ask that.
I'm always interested. You should let me take you out to dinner.
Well, one of the things that we're doing right now is actually revamping Stupid Easy Paleo. Become a food blog for fun, and now it's become a business. And the actual website needs a freshen up. Like it's not just a blog role anymore, but that's what you see when you go to the homepage. So we're going to be redesigning that. We've already gotten the branding done. And so it's going to kind of have a little bit, it's still going to have a simple look and stuff like that, but a little bit cleaned up. And then kind of the next big project is working on this new site that we have in the very beginning stages of going on, which is going to be devoted to basically women in strength sports, women in strength training. So that's kind of our like longer term project that we're working on. I don't know what's going to go on in terms of new books and stuff like that. I've got a couple that I want to write. I've got more ideas than I have time in the day to implement. You know, I also want to work on some stuff for resources for other bloggers. I get asked a lot, how did you start this thing? And, you know, how do I do this? And people are curious about blogging. They really want to know. So I've got some ideas about stuff to help fellow bloggers kind of get started and put their stuff out there.
Yeah, because you're always showing recipes and ideas from other paleo-esque or other food bloggers. You're not just like selfish, like, oh, check out my stuff. If somebody has a good recipe, I always see you like repost or retweet or...
Yeah, we try to kind of, you know, highlight what else is out there in the community and help people find other folks that they like to follow, because the beauty is that there is variety now and you can really find the, you know, 3 to 5 people that really resonate with you personally and what you like and your style of cooking. And it's really amazing. There's so many blogs now, and it's the variety is endless. So
nice. So Steph, we're gonna roll it up right now because we actually have literally somebody right after you. But we just want to thank you so much for giving us your time. And I don't know if you remember this, but we always end up with our random question.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm a little bit scared what this is gonna be.
All right. So Mads, do you want me to go first?
I can go first.
Go first. Go first.
Okay. Per ratio, you know, proportionate, are you stronger than your husband? Yes or no?
Oh, snap.
Because I've seen in the background,
no,
he looks like he's in good shape.
I think we're about even, all things considered. He's about 79 kilo, 80 kilo body weight, about 70, 69. So, yeah, he's got a good 200 kilo. A back squat.
Me?
Yeah.
I'm
80 kilos. 80 kilos. So, yeah, he's got a good 200 kilo back squat.
I'm jealous of his beard.
Yeah, it is pretty epic.
We call it the manplifier.
It's quite wonderful.
Adds 10 kilos to any lift.
There you go.
There you go.
All right, so my random question. Let's say your husband went out to go sailing and then got lost on a deserted island and we could never find him again. I got to compose myself. And you were almost jumped by 6 ninjas. And I fought him off with a machete. What are the chances you would... What are the chances you'd let me make you coffee?
I think there would be a good chance for coffee.
Yes.
All right.
Yeah. That's a very heroic deed that at least deserves a coffee.
Thank you. That was very hard for me to get out.
Six ninjas is legit.
6 ninjas with 1 machete. That's a big deal.
Or a kukuri.
Yeah.
That is a very big, very tall.
But I would do it all for you, especially because your husband would be on a deserted island.
You guys are always, always entertaining.
Well, I'm glad we could have you on today, and I'm going to keep writing on your Insta stalk and be like, I'm so proud of you.